On today's show, Jeremiah Searles, former Nebraska Cornhusker. Don't hold it against him. He's a good guy. He extends his lead as the most ever repeated guest on this show. You guys love when he comes on. We're going to talk post-draft football and all things having to do with being an agent and getting guys drafted to the NFL. Hope you enjoy. Let's have a day. Let's go.
Back, this is the Friendship Podcast, and tonight we have on who seems to be a guy that's like a second or third co-host on the show at this point. You've been here times where I haven't been, and times where I have been, and this is like number 5, 6, 7. So, Searles, welcome back, buddy. Always good to see you.
Oh my gosh, I got the text of the invite back, and I was tickled pink to be back with the boys. I mean, it's never a bad time to be on this pod, that's for sure.
You are, I think you have at least two or three over the next most frequent guest.
I'll take it.
Yeah.
You're our AJ Hawk, dude.
Yeah. Made a lot less money, but sure, I'll take it. How's it going, man? It's good. It's funny. There's actually, I might've mentioned this last time, but there's one of the girls that used to babysit us, huge Hawkeye fan. Her mom listens to the show religiously. And so I always get a text. Whenever I'm on the show, she's like, oh, I heard you on Walk-Ons. I was like, oh, I love it. I love it so much.
That's funny as hell, man. Shout out to the Walk-On Army out there.
Hey, gotta have them, man. Gotta have them. No, I've been good. You know, grinding away here. I got three kiddos now, so bouncing that. And then we just got through the draft, which was huge.
How many dudes did you get drafted?
We had two. We had two drafted. We had a second-round pick that went to the Giants, and then a fifth-round pick that went to the Colts, and then five free agents that all signed PFA deals. So seven for seven on the agency, which is awesome.
Is this your number one or your number two?
Two. You're number two. We had a fourth rounder last year. And then now we're just already on to 2024, starting to get my summer recruiting schedule down of making the rounds. And I'm trying to break myself into Iowa. So I'm going to try and keep cracking at that door. But man, there's some agents that got that place on lock. It is tough to get into.
Yeah, it's like two or three guys got.
There's this guy named Neil and this guy named Jack. And they got handcuffs on the place.
Yes, they do. And I'm noticing that more and more. I try and break in and they're like, I don't know if I can. All of a sudden it's like, Jack Betcha signed seven Iowa Hawkeyes this recruiting cycle. Well, got it. What about you? What have you guys been up to?
Is that pretty common around a lot of the other schools that there's like a handful of guys that kind of have really good relationships in there and kind of dominate the space? Or is that unique to Iowa?
You know, the SEC a little bit more, you know, like CAA has an office in Tuscaloosa, like trying to get into Tuscaloosa because they represent Saban.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. So it's like to try and get into Alabama and you're going to have to break out your checkbook big time to try and get inside an Alabama player. You know, the SEC is a little different animal, you know, but for the most part, not really. You know, a lot of it is based off of like the last prior 2 years, as far as like what you've done in that school.
Sure.
You know, like, and from an agent's perspective, you want to make sure that regardless if the guy's a first rounder or a priority free agent, you take care of him, because the last thing you need is you screw a guy, you don't take care of a guy, you're a poison pill at that school for the next 4 years.
Sure.
Right. Like, because they're going to come back and tell their buddies, like, oh, no, don't sign with that guy. You know, he lied to me or he did XYZ, you know. So it's always trying to just make sure that you're like, whatever school you go into, you have a really good rapport with the players who would like, they're your best recruiter. Right. Like the player talking to another player and be like, no, this guy did right by me. He did everything he said he was going to do. He helped me get better, yada, yada, yada. Like that's our best recruiting tool.
Yeah. And I know a bunch of the guys we played with heard from other former guys like that were working with that same agent, you know, putting in a good word for their guy, I'm sure. And I'm sure that's what you're trying to build up here. Take me through like your recruiting pitch process, though, especially being like only 1 or 2 years into it, like how are you trying to pitch these guys coming out versus the guys who've been doing it for 10 plus years, 20 plus years? Because It's some like crazy stat. There's like three times as many agents as there are spots in the NFL or something like that.
Yeah. You know, it's wild. Everyone wants to be an agent until you realize how expensive it is. You know, but the pitch really, yeah. I mean, it's dead serious. Like I tell people all the time, they're like, what is, I'm like, it's a higher form of gambling. You know, it's like, hey, I'm going to bet 15 grand that this kid's going to be able to let me feed my children. Right. And then your heart just starts racing come the draft and then come cut time. You know, but for us, you know, we're a little different. So Zach Zenner, he played running back for the Lions for 5 years in the NFL. He played running back at South Dakota State. Him and I are the only two agents that are certified that I know of that played recently in the last decade. You know, oh, really? So yeah. So for us, you know, it's a lot more of like, hey, we've been where you want to go. We know what it takes. Both of us were undrafted. So we understand that you have to claw and dig and grind for everything. And regardless if you're a draft pick or not, you know, we're going to instill that undrafted mentality in you, you know, because that's where the good ones become great. You know, so we talk a lot about that. We focus a lot on football.
We call it the walk-on mentality around here. So please.
I love it. Hey. I'm all about it. I was a walk-on into the NFL. It's the same thing.
Let's go.
You know, so we just talk about, you know, we focus a lot on football. You know, I think a lot of agencies try and, like, out-sports market each other. You know, it's like, oh, I'm going to get you this deal. I'm going to get you that deal. It's like, yeah, cool. Did he play? Because if he didn't play, no one wants to do any sports marketing. You know, so we really take a football-first approach to that, which has been really receptive to some. To others, we never get a second meeting. You know, but that just kind of goes to what I recruit. O-linemen, tight ends, running backs, linebackers, some D linemen, very hit or miss on those, you know, but I stay away from the edges. I don't touch corners. I don't touch receivers. I'll touch a quarterback every now and then.
You probably got a little less drama to deal with then that way too.
Oh my gosh, dude. Drama and just like the neediness. And I mean, I hated receivers and DBs when I played, you know, and like, honestly, like it's a profiling game a little bit. Like, what am I going to sit across this, like the screen from like this, if we're on a recruiting Zoom call, and you're a corner at Vanderbilt or you're a corner at Tennessee, like, what am I going to say to you that's going to be like, oh, yeah, I want to sign with that guy? You know, like, we can pitch it, but at the end of the day, like, they're just different breeds. The edges, the receivers, the DBs, they're just a different breed of player.
I mean, yeah, it is crazy, right? Because you're playing the same sport, but at the same time, it's completely different sport.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I can't evaluate a corner like, oh yeah, he ran really fast and jumped really high, like that's good, but like is he technically any good? Like, can he read coverages? Like, I can look at a O-lineman and I can look at a linebacker and I can be like, okay, he's gap sound or he has the techniques, like, you know. So it's a lot about that. Like, again, it's gambling, but I want to make sure I'm making the safer bets that I can.
What is the risk to you if you sign a kid who doesn't end up getting drafted or signed,
like, you know, free agency? Yeah, you know, so we don't have a ton. We have some like kind of payback clauses for like our training and whatnot, but majority of the time we treat it as a, hey, this is our investment in you. If this doesn't work out, then that's on us. You just know, yeah, you just eat it, you know, because I think I have a really hard time with guys that'll sign guys and then be like, if you don't make it, you got to pay me back. It's like, well, what's the point? Like, you got to have some skin in the game too here. Like, you need to be hustling. You need to be grinding on the phones and talking to GMs, talking to scouts. Like, you got to have some skin in the game. So we always like to let our players know, like, hey, we got skin in the game with this, with you too. We believe in you. Because as most people know, the NFL, you don't have a ton of people in your corner. So you want to make sure that your agent's always in your corner.
For sure, man. For sure. Well, man, it's exciting to get to see you getting up and running now. Not a big old class. Is this like your busy time of the year? Just kind of passed now that you got them all signed. Now you just kind of have to wait till like around camp time if anybody has to find a new home or something like that.
Yeah, the first 3 weeks after the draft are kind of our chill time, right? Like, it's a 4-month sprint. I was on the road 41 days between January and April, you know, so on the road a ton. You know, it's a sprint, but then you kind of take a deep breath, but then you want to build off your momentum that you had from the draft in the recruiting cycle. You know, so last time we talked, I told you that we were talking about opening up an O-line specific gym up in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
We've done that now, and now we actually have our second annual camp on Wednesday this upcoming week. I'm not sure when this pops, but on Wednesday the 17th, and we have guys coming in from Wisconsin, Illinois. We invited two Iowa guys. They're not coming. You know, we got 15 O-linemen coming in from across the country. We have Eric Galco from the Shrine Bowl that's going to come and speak. Jim Nagy from the Senior Bowl is going to come in. We have a rep from the NFLPA coming to come in. Just talk to these kids, mentor these kids, and help them, you know, what it's going to be as they head into their last season to give themselves their best chance. then obviously try and use this in recruiting too. Talk to those guys about how we can help them. So that's up and running up in Minneapolis, which is super fun.
We're seeing now, what is Nebraska hate really does run deep, dude.
Hey, listen, I don't have any Nebraska guys to invite. Hardcore. I didn't invite any of the Nebraska guys because we don't have any.
But you invited two Iowa guys? Have you seen our offensive line lately?
They're young players. They're up and comers.
They improved significantly.
Hey, listen, if there's one thing we can have some relate on this podcast, it's the terrible O-line plays from our alma maters here.
And what could possibly be more frustrating? I didn't even play offensive line, but when you have a defense just has everybody on lock and then you watch your offense, it's just
– I mean, it literally was like, okay, as long as they don't score 17 points, we're going to win. Like, it's like it was like a race to 17.
Yep.
I'll tell you this. That South Dakota State game made me want to put freaking nails through my eyeballs watching that Iowa-South Dakota State game.
Dude, when you got the home fans booing when you're winning the game, that's when you know, right?
Yeah.
It just goes to show, like, I don't think there is one position group that can be more detrimental to your team if that position group is subpar than the offensive line. There's just nothing you can do with terrible offensive line.
No, you can have all the skilled players in the world. I mean, that was kind of our story at Nebraska last year. Everyone's like, oh, you guys got Trey Palmer and Casey Thompson and all these playmakers. And I was like, we didn't address the one glaring issue, which is if he only has 1.5 seconds to throw the football, I don't care if Jerry Rice is running down the field. It doesn't matter. You know, so I'll be curious to see what Nebraska does. Also curious to see what Iowa does. But, boys, the Big Ten is going to look different this year. Like, Wisconsin coming out in a spread offense is going to blow people's minds with Luke Fickell up there. Like, the Big Ten, I think, is going to be a whole different
league. We've got a quarterback and a tight end from Michigan, a receiver from Ohio State. Half our team is from different.
We need some offensive linemen to have some growing to do, but the Hawks might be all right again this year.
I think we brought in offensive lineman from somebody, too.
That's true.
Yeah, but Drake, you build offensive line from within. You have to. Like, that's why you don't see big O-linemen don't hit the portal, because if you have them, you don't let them go. Right? Like, everyone's like, oh, go to the portal, find O-linemen. It's like, if they're in the portal, it's probably because they weren't starting at the school that they were at. You know, like, that's
a tough thing. Started at a school that was much smaller.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Like, if some guy's playing at UTEP and then Oklahoma offers them.
Yeah, I mean, the tackle from San Diego State just transferred to Ohio State.
There you go.
Right, like you see those type of things, you don't see a ton of Power Five within Power Five O-linemen transferring.
How do you think the Fickell situation is going to work out at Wisconsin? Kind of like a different philosophy from what they've had in the previous years, no?
Yeah, very. You know, I'll be curious to see if he goes square peg, round hole, you know, or if he's like, no, it's spread my offense and we're just going to keep doing what I'm doing. Or if he's going to be like, listen, here's what the pieces that I have right now. Like, I have a power style players. Like, I can't just spread everyone out. Like, unless he told all his offensive linemen to drop 30 pounds and be able to run a spread offensive hurry up offense, it's not going to work. Right. Like, it's just not going to work. So I think you'll see a little bit of a blend, but I'll be really curious to see what that looks like. But it's going to be, I mean, I bet you they throw the ball more than they run the ball in the first part of the year, which is going to be extremely interesting, especially when you have a guy like Braylon Allen standing back there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do they
have a quarterback in the portal at all? Do you know?
No, I don't know who their starting quarterback is. I'm sure they went and got someone, but mm-hmm. I mean, because Meritz is where now? Where did he transfer to? Graham Meritz? Or is he still there or did he transfer?
I think he transferred.
Dude, I can't even keep up with all these kids anymore. It's like, it's literally like free agency by about 1,000.
He's got some pretty bad tape. So not real concerned with where he's.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure if he transferred, he was one of those that we call transferring down. You know, like, hey, FAU, you need a quarterback? Sweet.
I need out of town. Yeah. Do you, I'm actually really curious about this.
Yeah.
You might know, having dealt with NFL GMs and coaches and scouts these days. What is the NFL point of view on a player that has like multiple transfers under their belt? Do they see that as a negative, or like, you know, obviously you have the rare breed of the guys who transfer from San Diego State mm-hmm. to Ohio State, right? Okay, yeah, guys going to go play better competition. Well, what is like, you know, a guy goes power five, really kind of a lateral move. Is there any sort of point of view on that around the league, consensus wise, like this is a bad thing, this is a good thing, or?
You know, all it does is it creates guys to have to do more background check on you. You know, I think that if you have a guy that transfers, especially a multiple transfer guy, right, like an Oliver Martin, right? Yeah. Michigan, Iowa, Nebraska, like, you know, it's one of those things where they're going to evaluate him as a player, but they're going to have to take a deeper dive into try and figure out the kid's makeup.
Yeah. Like, right? why isn't this kid working out at this culture and this culture? At some point, it's
but not. But then you got Charlie Jones. Boom, boom. Yes. Oops. Almost Biletnikoff.
Right. I mean, it just causes more work, I think, for the scouts. I think they view it as just like, okay, I have to do some more research on this guy. I need to talk to more people about it. And it can go either way. Like, I think it can be really helpful for kids. It can also be a detriment. You know, I think a lot of it is so much is on-field play. I mean, 90% of it is on-field play. Absolutely. And then there's that 10% of the kid makeup and the pre-draft process of, you know, guys can really tank themselves a la DeJuan Jones from Ohio State this year. You know, goes to the Senior Bowl, practices one day, doesn't finish the rest of the week. Everyone had him projected as a first, falls to the third. You know, so there's a ton of stuff in the pre-draft process you can catch yourself up on. But the transfer portal itself, I still think is a good thing. I do like the rule that if you transfer twice, you have to sit out a year now, because then that'll kind of stop the madness a little bit. You know, that'll make kids really stop and think about, like, is this worth missing an entire year of my eligibility to jump ship twice?
For sure. For sure. Yeah. Now, interesting. Interesting, man.
Well, I got to know, Drake. So, jujitsu, what's the end game here? Are you going to be professionally fighting?
I'm training MMA hobby? Right
like,
now.
What are we doing?
I'm training MMA right now, and I'm just going to see how it goes, man. I'm most interested in getting my black belt in jujitsu because I'd love to coach it someday. Jujitsu is one of the coolest things ever. The way that you like play chess with body leverage, it's the coolest. It just, my mind loves it. So I would love to be a jujitsu coach someday. And to do that, I want to get my black belt, obviously. But in that process, would love to fight. And so I took two fights last year and the other guy backed out. So I still have yet to get in the cage. Going to try and do so in September, I think. And
where at? See if I will very much try and make that.
Arizona. It should be in Arizona. Right. Yeah.
You let me know. Right. I will definitely try and make that. I think right. that it's such a fascinating sport. You know, like football, you got to be a special kind of crazy, but to get in a cage with another human, like you got to be borderline psychotic, I know you well enough that you are.
Yeah. I mean, but then when you actually learn how to fight, you realize how fighting is so much less of like playing fullback than it is playing quarterback. Fighting and playing quarterback are the same things.
Interesting.
You have to read, react, and pull the right trigger at the right time.
I've never got to ask a fighter this. Like, is your mentality when you, and I know you haven't walked into the cage yet, but like walking into the cage, is it like I want to hurt this other person, or is it like I need to kill this other person? Like mentality wise, like is it like kill or be killed, or is it just like tactical, like you said? Because I've always been under the impression,
I'm always thinking about the skills when I'm in there. I'm like thinking about what do I do. Like I'm too busy trying to win rounds and stuff when I spar than I am thinking about like I want to hurt the guy.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Do you think that'd be any different in an actual fight, though? Like, I'm obviously interested. Your sparring partners, your friends, your buddies,
right.
You train with, right? You obviously don't want to hurt them, but like,
you have to be in the mindset that when you're going into a fight, you have to be in the mindset that you're willing to hurt the person. Like, you're going in there to hurt the person until the ref stops it. I mean, it is a fight at the end of the day. Like, you know what you're signing up for. But from what I've experienced and from what I've talked to my friends who are professionals, especially the good ones, their intentions when they're in there is not to just kill this person. It is to win the fight, do whatever it takes to win the fight. And that's it. So yeah, it's more like playing quarterback and trying to dissect everything that's going on in front of you, except instead of linebackers, it's fists and kicks and shit.
Have you got an agent yet?
No, I haven't, but I might be looking.
You want to get in the MMA game?
Hey, I might dabble. I'll see about. There's probably not a ton of certification you need for that.
No, dude.
This guy wants to fight this other guy. Oh, cool. Let's set it up.
It'd be cool.
Pay my 3%.
No, you know, because I always try and relate, you know, I'm trying to get in the minds of, it's something I've been doing, is like other professional athletes' mindsets when they walk into different things, right? Like a golfer or a fighter or an NHL player or a football player. Like, because I don't know if you guys, I mean, you guys talked to, like, this generation of kid that's coming up is so different than even what we were just a decade ago.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. The killer instinct of, like, I'm going to kill myself until I complete the task, right? You said I'll win the fight at all costs, or I'm going to do whatever it takes to make sure that there's not someone that's going to outwork me, or any of those things. Like, there's so many roundabout ways that people try and get to those things today. And like, especially in younger kids, like I have a buddy who played in the MLB that coached high school baseball, that like the kids just like, they cared more about their hitting percentage than they did if they won the game. And like, it was just, it's such a like secondhand thing, and you're seeing more and more of that, and the NIL and the transfer portal and all the stuff that we just talked about relates to that. I mean, from a football side, but like, I was trying to see, is that mentality also creeping into other sports?
I'm glad to hear that you say that you feel that about the transfer portal, because that's how I feel about it. Like, it's nice when your team gets good transfers, and I'm not going to sit here and not act like I'm not happy that right now have Cade McNamara playing quarterback for us. Like, so pot calling the kettle black here, but it's a quitter's mentality that is being formed by that shit.
Or is it just like a me over we mentality? Is
that, I think that's, yeah, you know, I think it's more of a me over we mentality. Like,
quick break to give some love to one of our biggest partners right now. That's right, you guessed it, pork. Bacon, ground pork, ham, pork roast, pork belly, ribs, pork loin, pork shoulder, and pork sausage. You name it, you're probably hungry now. Nutritionally speaking, animal proteins are top of the line. They are nutrient dense and satiating, helping to promote less overconsumption of calories and a better body composition. Pig farmers today are raising more pork using less land, water, and energy than ever before. And the manure from the pigs is then used to fertilize next year's corn crop, all in an effort to continue to try and become more efficient. We've mentioned multiple times how before we ever came into this partnership, my personal favorite stop at the state fair every year was for a pork burger at the Pork Producers Building. And every home game against Minnesota, Kevin and his family bust out the best pork chops available. The walk-ons and pork are a match made in heaven. Put some pork on your plate today.
Hey, it's Peter Harmon, the food guru, here to talk about Gray's Gourmet To Go. At Gray's Gourmet To Go, we are madly and passionately in love with three things: chicken lips, pizza, and great food to go. Chicken lips are the most beloved food in Iowa City. And if you don't know what a chicken lip is, you're really missing out. Our second passion is pizza. We're hell-bent on making great pizza. Yeah, you can get cheap pizza anywhere. But if you're a real pizza aficionado, you gotta try our meatball pizza. It's made with a natural starter. And like sourdough bread, it's soft and crispy and light as air. And the third thing that we're wildly and passionately in love with is great food to go. We believe you want to feed your family something great at home, but you're too busy with life to stop and cook. That's why we built Gray's Gourmet To Go. So the next time you need to feed the gang and you don't feel like cooking, just come to graysgourmettogo.com.
It was always about, for me and for our team, and it was win. Like, I don't care. Like, I could have five MAs and whatever. Like, all will be forgiven at the end of the game as long as we win. Right. And I'm going to beat the crap out of myself if I have those MAs and we lose the game. But there's this mentality that's just creeping into kids of like the what have you done for me lately mentality. And it drives me nuts because the league is not a what have you done for me lately league. You know, it's a win at all costs or we're going to cut you. And so like trying to just, I've been pulling different players of different sports of like, what is your makeup? How do we relate to these kids? And how are we relating to the young players that are trying to do these things? And it's just, it's a really fascinating game. I do not envy college coaches. Like, no, college coaches trying to recruit, like,
babysitters now.
Because you have to recruit your kids when they're still there. Like, they're still there and you recruited them all the way through the process, but you still have to like nurture and baby or else they're just going to jump ship on you. And it's just, it's such a bizarre world to live in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember like back. Yeah. Obviously, fuck, we're gotten that old.
We're old, dude.
Back in our day. that there was like an extreme de-recruitment process from the moment you stepped on
campus. Extreme.
About like the first year, right?
Process. Yes.
It's like you were talked up. Everyone was sucking your ass for the last 3 years of recruitment. Not us, but you know, scholarship players.
Yeah. But it still hit us. You could go from not being recruited to super not being recruited.
Exactly. And then, you know, the next year you're getting told about how fucking hard it's going to be. You're not that good. You need to work, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
And sit down, shut up, and work. And now it's like, hey, sit down and but work a little bit. But we still want to rub your back and make sure everything's okay so that you don't leave. And it's awful. It's awful.
Yeah. The college coaches just have so much to deal with these days. And then on top of that with – yeah, again, it's just a different generation of kids, right?
Yeah. I mean, any one of us here that got the kind of money these kids are getting, we'd all be in
terrible places. Bro, I have terrible no idea what I would do as a college student making even 40 grand a year. Like, I don't even know what you do with that.
I'd be flashing Glocks like John Morant.
Twice. Not once, but twice.
I just have guns and bitches.
I would have had a platinum pass to every strip club.
There's like two in like
yeah, all of the strip clubs in Eastern Iowa.
Yeah, Iowa City's finest.
That means I only got to have two platinum passes.
There'd be a special bell that went off in the back when Drake walked in.
Dude, Drake.
But I mean, seriously though, like you know, we got our scholarship checks, and those were close to $2,000 a month, right? That paid for
your rent.
Rent, utilities, all your food was free. What else were you paying for? What are you going to do with an extra $1,000 a week? I have no idea.
I've heard stories from scouts and stuff that talk about like what some of these kids in the portal demand, or even what some of these kids in high school demand now. The number one recruit a couple of years back, I think he was going to Tennessee. This guy was telling me a story that coming out, it might have been him, coming out of high school, they called and they said, all right, what's it going to take to sign this guy? And again, this is all hearsay. I don't know if this is true or not. But they said the dad was handling it. And the dad goes, okay, the going rate is $500,000 when he signs his national letter of intent. Another $500,000 when he walks on campus in the summer. We want new Jeeps from him, new Jeeps for mom and dad. And then we want private use of your guys' private plane to fly us to every one of his games. And they said, sure, and did it. Like, could you imagine being 18 years old and be like, hey, here's $1 million. Like, it's... these kids are making more money than they are going to make in the league. Like, that's why you see quarterbacks rolling back. Like, the North Carolina quarterback should have went to the NFL. He's going to be like a fourth-round pick. He's like, I'm going to make $2 million next year. Why would I leave? It's right, insane. Exactly.
Safe choice, right? Honestly, the craziest part of that for me is, like, the PJ thing. It's like, I can understand some donors shoveling out some cash, but the big big boosters want to use the PJ on themselves in game weekends, I'm sure.
Yeah. Nope, just flying them out from wherever they're from. It's wild, dude. Because there's no governing body.
He's
zero.
A quarterback. You got to remember that. Like,
who gives
a booster
shit
that really want? No. I'm telling Kevin. Like, if you're a booster that really wants to win and you have the capability now to just pay him whatever you want, you're like, finally, I can pay for the dude I want. Take my jet. I'll pick your parents up on a tarmac. We'll take my jet.
I mean, all I'm saying is if the team ends up winning a national championship, that guy better get a ring too.
For sure.
I agree.
But what it's also doing is it's giving those guys power.
Influence,
the collectives, right? These collectives that are forming, they have so much pull. It's ridiculous how much pull they have because the donors are the money, right?
Dude, and if the donor who sold the quarterback who wins the national championship, he's now got a platinum pass to every single one of the massage parlors in town for the rest of eternity.
Easy, Robert Kraft.
Deshaun Watson style.
Easy.
No, it's interesting you say that because, you know, we've had our guy who runs our collective over here. His name's Brad, and he's said something similar. He's like, these collectives are going to be more powerful than the athletic departments here in the next 5 to 10 years.
They're going to be front offices. Yeah. They're front offices.
They already right? are.
Yeah, and guess what? If all of a sudden the front office doesn't like the head coach anymore, they'll just say, hey, this spigot that's just funneling money to you, off.
I heard that's what happened in Lincoln.
Where are the donors going to put their money, right? Are they going to put it with the collective that they know goes directly to getting better athletes, which translates to better, more on-field performance, more wins, et cetera? Or are they going to
the athletic department where it spreads it everywhere, right?
Right.
It's not going to happen.
Nope. Nope. It's, yeah, I mean, I think I talked about it when I think we jumped on when we said the Big Ten. I mean, the last maybe when they canceled it during COVID, we were all talking about how the NCAA is just a means to an end anyways. Like, it's not far off. It's not far off.
What's it even doing these days?
I mean, when we were in school, they had the biggest hammer of all time, and they could wield that thing. And if you took a freaking penny from a leper and you took it, they just, boom, ineligible, right? Like, they did.
How about Soviet Russia coming to the ground right in front of us, baby?
Dude, just the wall crumbling, right? Mr. Warbitat, tear down that wall, right? Like, they just, there's nothing they can do. They have zero teeth. Zero teeth. They'll be like, hey, that looks like a violation. Nah, piss off. You don't matter anymore.
Eat my balls.
That's exactly, like, the NCAA does nothing anymore besides set up the tournaments.
You know how Twitter, Elon ravaged Twitter's total employees, and like 80% of them got like laid off or whatever. I feel like that's what happened to the NCAA. You walk into the NCAA and you just go by like a bunch of cubicles and you're like, what do you guys do? And they're like, we don't know.
Are you guys Succession fans? Do you watch Succession? Any of you?
That's on my list. That's like my next thing to watch.
Well, there's a scene where like he's walking around the floor and he's like standing behind this guy, like the boss, right? He's standing behind the guy and the guy's at the computer and he's sitting there and he's just staring down and the guy comes up and he goes, what are you doing? He goes, one fucking email. This guy's got one fucking fire. Right? It's just like that's exactly what's happening in the NCAA. Like, you do nothing. You sit there. Like, all those compliance officers – you know, the compliance officers, like, the second this happened, they were like, well, my job just got a whole lot easier. I don't have to do anything. Nothing's illegal anymore. Nothing.
My brother does that for the NAIA, actually. That's what
does he? Okay. So
he's not a compliance. He's not a compliance officer, but I mean, he deals with incoming students and transfers and their eligibility to the new school.
So is that what compliance does now? Is there kind of like the transfer portal guys?
I think most of their responsibility has fallen on, is this person, you know, like, is the academics in order? Are all the transfer paperwork good to go? Class requirements, are they caught up here? Are they caught up there? And like, that's about it. As far as that, like, the only other thing I can think of what the NCAA actually does is, I mean, they have other functions I'm sure that we could come up with, but like the main one now is just basically putting on the championships for every sport. Other than that, it's
being a bitch. I think that's on their list.
I think that's somewhere in the boardroom.
It's crazy.
But again, if like the Power Five conferences wanted to create their own entity, that's something that they could very easily do themselves.
And those would be highly sought after positions too.
Oh my gosh. I mean, imagine you had a commissioner. Like, you just, it basically, like, you take the example and you take the blueprint of what the XFL and the USFL is, and you just turn it to college athletics, right? You just turn it to college athletics. Like, okay, you're now feeder league to the NFL. You all get paid. You all go to school still, but like, you're now employees of X company. And then the group of five schools are just absolutely hammered. They're done. Like, they got no chance anymore. That's where it becomes the problem.
Yeah. It's interesting. You mentioned the XFL, USFL. Does the Searles Agency of Success give a shit at all, have anything to do with those two leagues, or are you primarily focused on the NFL?
Yeah, we actually had a player in the XFL this year. I think that it's a good place for players to go and get tape. You know, if you get cut after the preseason as a rookie and you really have very minimal tape, your only way to get back into the league is to get more tape. You know, so I think it's good for that. You know, I think it's good to be able to put some money in some kids' pockets. You know, I also think it's somewhat of a reward. You know, these guys work all their college. They work so hard in the pre-draft process, get released. Like, you want to still play football, at least for a year, right? Like, so it allows you to actually get a season of football in, and then you can decide from there, like, okay, I've chased this for now almost a full calendar year. Now what do I want to do? You know, and the XFL, I think it said it had over 65 rookie minicamp guys get invited for tryouts, which is awesome. You know, I've seen like Ben DiNucci from the Seattle Sea Dragons signed with the Denver Broncos today. You know, so I do think there's going to be opportunities, but I do think that there's a lot of guys in that league that just finished up that thought they were going to get opportunities, and it's just, there's not enough seats at the table. Like, there just never is.
I think that's the way it is with a lot of feeder leagues though.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I have to imagine, you look at baseball, there's
AAA. There's three single A leagues, double A, triple A is like, yeah, there's five teams for each organization. Like, did you guys, how many of those guys are actually going to get the shot, right?
Yeah,
right.
Did you guys see a month ago the guy on the Pirates who has spent 10 years in the
That's not 10. An uncommon story.
And then he finally he's 33 years old, and he got called up and played his first major league game this year. And he looks like – I mean, he looks like you. He looks like a father of three in his 30s. Like – and he's playing his first major league game, and like it's but obviously
baseball's a sport where you can do that, though. So sure. What would you put the timeline on a kid who comes out after college? How long can you spend in that feeder league before it's like, hey, man, it's just not happening for you? If two the years. NFL is your ultimate yeah. goal, yeah, I'd say two years tops, right?
Yeah.
Which I mean, I would argue almost makes the NFL having a feeder league more important because. Agreed. Because you know you don't have as much opportunity. You have a very short window to really maximize, like you said. You know, you need tape,
yeah.
or you need a fucking miracle.
Yeah, I mean, if you hit 30 in the NFL, you're a dinosaur. I mean, you're looked at as like the oldest guy in the room. So I mean, if you graduate in COVID year now, guys aren't leaving college till they're 24, right? So if you're 24, you go through your rookie year, you're 25, you don't have anything, you play 26, 27, the chance of you getting into the league without having any experience at 26, 27 is drastically low. Drastically low.
Yeah, yeah, and you can forget about, like, getting your 10-year pension, all that shit. Like, they might sign you for, like, hey, this guy might have one or two
good years. You're hoping for practice squad and get elevated a few times, make 150K, say you had the shield on your chest for a little bit, and then figure out what's next in life. Go start a podcast or something.
You can always go start a podcast, that's for sure.
Fuck, man. I mean,
I want to circle back to the draft real quick.
Absolutely.
Tell me what it's like from the agent's perspective on draft day one through three. So, like, you had one guy signed day two or drafted day two, right? But he could have been a day one guy. So,
yeah.
Tell me what that's like.
For sure. Yeah. You know, so John Michael Schmitz, the center out of Minnesota, was kind of our headliner this year for our class. And he was right on that fringe first round, like knew he was going in the second, but had a chance to sneak into the bottom of the first. You know, so the whole pre-draft process, we're just trying to gather as much information as possible, right? Like as an agency, we're trying to talk to all the teams that like him, where they're at, what are they thinking, breaking down rosters. And then come draft night, like it's just a lot of hurry up and wait. You know, you're looking at trades, you're looking, okay, I know that the Giants, for example, like we knew they needed a center. We knew they loved John Michael and they were at pick 25, but we also knew the number one need that they needed was a corner. And so like all the way as we're watching, we're like, come on, more DBs, more DBs, more DBs. And as you found more DBs fall and fall and fall, you're like you needed a lot of things to go right for you to become a first rounder. You know, unless you're a top 15 pick, you need a lot of things to go right for you to actually become a first round pick.
Sure.
You know, ask Will Levis, right? Like,
man, bad does that feel, dude? Josh Jackson had the same experience a couple of years ago, but he wasn't the quarterback, right?
Yep.
Like, that's tough.
Ask Porter Jr. I mean, do you get invited one of 17 players in the entire class and you don't go? Like, that's it's just you can't predict the NFL draft. Yeah. It's the most unpredictable thing in the world.
I would never go.
Unless you're a top 10 pick. If you're if you're a bona fide, if you're one of the top two quarterbacks, the number one running back, the number one offensive tackle, and like the number one edge rusher, sure.
And you know there's no videos of you bonging out of a fucking gas mask out there.
That was a toughie too, boys.
Yeah, I mean, granted, he only fell to 13th, but, you know.
and that boy's making money. It hadn't affected him, really.
Gosh, dude. But, yeah, I mean, think about, like, Lamar Jackson sitting there by himself, last one in the green room, right? Like, it's one of those things that you don't want to go, you know. So then second night, we knew it was going to happen, but it was just like a waiting game. And we told John, like, we're like, listen, there's going to be guys that get drafted in front of you that you know you're better than, but that's just what it is. It's just part of the NFL draft, you know. And he was like, yeah, kind of, maybe. And then Joe Tippmann from Wisconsin gets drafted to the Jets in front of him. Steve Avila goes to the Rams, and he texts me. He's like, you're right, I'm pissed. I'm ready to go. I'm like, that's just what the NFL is, right? But that becomes, again, on my end of being an agent of creating realistic expectations. You know, like Will Levis, he's probably furious with his agent. Right? Because agents
I'd have fired him, dude.
His agents are like, you're going fourth overall.
Agent got you sitting up there looking like a bozo. Fired before I even leave the green room.
Yeah. I mean, that's part of what our job is to create realistic expectations. But it goes back to my point of trying to understand these kids as far as if you don't tell them what they want to hear, they go into, well, why would I be with you? I'm supposed to be a first round pick. Why am I? It's like, you're not going to be a first round pick. Like I'm doing my job, you know? So.
And it's not like you have agency over that, right? It's not,
no,
you have like no influence in where they're going to go.
I mean, unless you're, what's his name? David Cantor that is offering vacation homes. Did you guys see that story?
No.
There's an agent that's being investigated right now. It came out on Twitter yesterday. He's being investigated by the NFL by offering bribes to make teams draft his players by offering weekends at his vacation home. So that's a no-no.
Are the NFL organizations not paying their staff well enough that they can get bribed by a weekend vacation?
Dude, I don't know. I hope it's not true because that's just going to be a whole can of worms. But at the same time, like in this business, I could see it being true. You know, again, it's all allegations, but like I read that and I was like, I couldn't imagine calling an exec and being like, hey, listen, how do you feel about August 15th through the 17th, Boca Raton, Florida, all expenses paid. You guys just need my corner. Like, I couldn't imagine like the balls to even do that. Like, it's insanity to me.
Listen, there'll be a nice 5'4" blonde waiting on the couch.
There's a bus out front that's gonna pull up, has BB on it. Anyways, you know, so moving forward, like we knew it was gonna happen the sex, so it's just a lot of waiting. Get him drafted, super excited, everyone's pumped, right? You call him, you get calls from the team. What was really exciting for me is actually Brian Daboll was my offensive coordinator in Buffalo. Bobby Johnson, who was the offensive line coach for Giants, was my offensive line coach in Buffalo. So it's just really cool to get to talk with them and kind of a full circle moment there. Of like, man, I played for you, and now I'm repping a guy that you just picked in the second. Like, super fun. And then day three, we knew that our running back was going to go at one point, but we just kind of, again, Northwestern. So he was one of the two good players that were on Northwestern that year. So he had Peter Skoronski and Evan Hall, and we got one of them. You know, so he ended up going to the Colts in the fifth, and then the free agency frenzy started. And this is where – For me, agency's fun. This is where
that's probably where you make your money, right? That's where correct. Like is late round. You're starting to talk about like, hey, your guy's probably not going right.
Mm-hmm.
Sixth, seventh round, you're like starting to do math. Okay, I got these guys probably aren't going to find a home before the end of the draft.
Yeah, I mean, and that's take where me,
yeah,
yeah, that's where having an agent that's a football guy really helps you. Mm. Because a lot of times you'll see guys be like, wow, this guy signed for $40,000, like look how much they love. It's like, yeah, but the roster situation is shit, right? Like I do roster breakdowns for my offensive line. I'll just use them. I had two offensive line free agents this year, and I had a roster breakdown for every single team in the NFL for what that offensive line looked like. Not just from like a player's perspective, like, okay, starters, but like who's making the money? Who's mm-hmm. safe? Right? Like, okay, if they draft one guy, is the situation still good? If they draft two guys, is it now practice squad only? If they draft one, then the whole room's fucked and we're completely out.
So are you sitting right where you're sitting right now when all this happened? Or do you have like your own war room where you've got up on the, like, or a spreadsheet on your computer that you're updating with each team's picks to keep that those situation? Yeah. Up to date, even to the day, like, oh, this team just drafted their offensive line looked great yesterday, but they drafted a guy. So now it doesn't look quite as good. So now I'm weighing it. Is that basically your process?
Yeah, 100%. All three of us, we have three partners. We all went up to Minneapolis. We got a suite at the Intercontinental right there by the airport. And we just made it exactly, you said, our war room, right? My other partner had three free agents and I had two. And then our kind of senior partner, who was both of our agents, is kind of there helping us through the whole thing. And we have our full spreadsheets up, our whiteboard of, hey, okay, I have an offer from the Saints for this much, for this much, for this player. What's his roster situation? Boom, boom, boom. Okay, that's not a great one. Okay, what do you got? You got something from the Lions? Like, and you're just going back and forth. But at the same time, you can't get too cute because all of a sudden teams just evaporate, right? You're talking to a team for 3-4 times back and forth on the phone, and then you finally call them back. It rings. You get pushed. Shoot a text, no response. And you're like, okay, that team's over. They've moved on. Time to go to the next one. Right. And you want to make sure it's a giant game of musical chairs at the end of the draft.
Wow. That's
a giant game of musical chairs.
And it's happening way more fun
than any fantasy draft you've ever.
Oh my gosh. It's so much more stressful, but also so much more fun.
Yeah. And what is the time constraint on, like, you get that first offer from one of your guys? How long do you think you usually have before that offer's gone?
2 to 3 minutes.
You're shitting me.
Yeah, because so here you got to look at it. So that's from the agent's perspective, from the team's perspective, right? So I'm the scout that's handling offensive line priority free agents for the Broncos. Like, and I have my GM says, all right, we need two priority free agents. Here's our stack, right? Here's our guys that we want from priority of tier one, tier two, tier two, three. It's like, it's your job to get us the top two that you can. So say my guy is number two on the stack. They called number one. He's not interested. He's going to weigh his options. They immediately go, okay, yeah, sure. Call me back. Cool. Click. Immediately call number two. Right. And I don't know if I'm one, two, three, four, five in line. I don't know where I'm at. So like, hey, we really love your guy. We're willing to give you this much signing bonus, this much paragraph five. What do you think? And in that moment, I have to be able to be split decision of like, do I take this deal? Do I say, hey, let me call you right back? Do I try and put this team on ice because I think I might be able to get some more money out of them? Do I want to try and leverage this offer from another offer with another team? And I've got about 2 or 3 minutes to be doing that while also balancing two guys, right? So I've got one guy that I'm doing that with and the other guy, and the phones ring in. You're going text message back and forth. And
you also have to be coordinating with your client on this now too, right?
Yes and no. You know, so what we do is we try and get our clients to sign us off on like, trust us that we're going to put you in the best situation. Right. Like, and most of our clients do, because it's like we tell them this exact story. Like, if I say, hey, let me call my client, and I hang up the phone to them and I call you and we weigh it out for 2 or 3 minutes and say we want to pull the trigger on the deal, and then I call them back, they could be gone.
Jesus.
Like, it could be over. That's right. Like, and so it's a little bit of back and forth, and you have to be comfortable with your client that they'll be willing to trust you to do that. And that just comes from the whole pre-draft process of like, have I ever led you astray yet? Right, like, have I built the confidence that you trust me that I'm going to get you in the right situation?
And so the end call there becomes, hey, Johnny, you're going to Atlanta.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like, the end call calls and be like, hey, buddy, you're going here. And then usually right after that, the team guys call and be like, all right, when are you flying out?
And
right. It's so fast paced. And then by the end of it, I needed many, many drinks.
So what is, like, how long before, you know, draft ends and then boom, the phones are lighting up?
Yeah, I mean, it's very, very quick.
Are you guys having those conversations? Are you allowed to have those conversations before the draft ends?
I'm gonna plead the fifth on that one.
There's some feelers out there.
Not supposed to. I'm just gonna leave it at that. It's not, but it is a bit of a gray area.
Yeah,
you're not supposed to, but at the same time, like I said, the music stops. You want to make sure you have a seat.
I think we've had plenty of guys come on the show and be like, yeah, so we're sitting there day three and I get a call, and like, as a guy getting drafted, and they're like, hey, if you don't get drafted, we'd love to have you as a, they're already setting that up.
Oh yeah. They recruit the kids hard. I mean, so we represent Adrian Martinez, quarterback, Nebraska, was at Kansas State. He was getting, teams are now recruiting before the draft even begins. He was getting like hype videos sent to him, swag bags from like teams that are like, we've had this many undrafted free agents make our team. And like, they recruit.
They're recruiting him as an undrafted walk-on.
They recruit undrafted free agents because they know
they're an undrafted free agent.
Yeah, because that's where they're at on their board.
Wow.
Right? Like, on their board, they know they're not going to draft them. You know, and they always leave the teaser with, you know, maybe if things fall right, we might be able to grab you late in the seventh, you know. Like, but they know that it's not a draftable player for them, but they love them and they think they have a chance to make their team, but they're just not willing to invest the signing bonus and the draft capital into that player, you know? So it's, we always tell those guys, like, cause they'll call us all excited, right? Like, I just got something from it. And we have to kind of, this is what the game is. Like, they're recruiting you. And also, we've had teams that have gone around us completely because, for example, 2 years ago, we had a player that Tampa Bay really wanted, right? They really wanted him. And they ended up drafting two of the guys in his position ahead of him. And then they still wanted to sign him as a free agent. And so we had basically like cut them off the board because like, it's a terrible roster situation. And all of a sudden he's getting calls from the OC. He's getting calls from the tight end coach. And they're like, no, we really, really want you. And he's like calling us. And we're like, tell them to call your agent. Like, if they there's a reason they're calling you and not us. Like, they want to get you to verbally agree to something, and then they're going to call us and be like, hey, we got him. Like, and teams will do that all the time. I had a guy from a team shot a text message to one of my old linemen. He was like, can't wait to make you a cowboy. Can't wait to make you a cowboy. And I was like, I haven't heard from them. They haven't called me once. Like, I don't know what he's talking about. Like, it's complete pandemonium. Scum. And it's just complete, like, all over the place. And all of a sudden it just stops. It's just over. And at that point, you're like, okay, do all my guys have homes? Do all my guys in good roster situations? Cool. Then that's a win. And that's luckily where we were at this year. You know, last year we had two guys that didn't get any calls, and that's a gut-wrenching feeling. Having to make that call to the player that, like, you can hear the dream die on the phone. You know, so we had a saying in the agency this year, no shattered dreams in May. You know, and so that for us was the big thing this year. Everyone's going to get a chance. We're going to make sure that everyone has a home, and then the chips will fall where they fall, because now it's on them to go make the team. But no shattered dreams in May was the big one for us this year.
Okay. So what is the time frame? All right, draft ends, last player is announced, boom, phones start lighting up. How long before the game of musical chairs is over?
About an hour.
Holy shit.
About an hour in, all the roster spots are filled.
Hour in, everything's filled. And then now, if you don't have a player that's at that point, you're borrowing, stealing, calling every connect that you have, just begging for a mini camp in.
I remember when our draft went through and the next day came around, I was like, hey, maybe I'll get a call today.
Negative. That's contract review day.
Dumbass.
All the contracts are already sent over to us. We're already reading through them and signing them.
Can you give me an idea on two different things, numbers wise? Because I think this is, yeah. I think a lot of people get interested. I'm confused because I never went through it. The three of us never went through it.
Yeah.
But now you're a part of it. You were a player, so you've seen multiple sides of this. What does a seventh rounder's money look like split into? How is it structured versus the top of the top undrafted free agents versus the lowest, like you're getting like three packs of bubble gum and two nights in a hotel? Like, what is the range of money there? We hear about all the time the top stuff, right?
Yeah,
the top guys are signing for $15 million in the first round, and that's fucking absurd, and they are set for life. But what does like a bottom guy make versus the full range of undrafted free agents?
Yeah, you know, I don't have the number in front of me. I think the last pick in the draft signing bonus this year is like 120,000. Like,
really?
Yeah, it's like 100. It might be. It's anywhere between $75,000 and $100,000 to sign.
That's better than I thought.
Right, and then they're going to make league minimum, as every rookie makes, whether you're first round or last. You're going to make the same, which this year is 750.
Right.
So you make 750,000 your first year, and then it incrementally goes up. You know, from what we've seen in the free agent market, you know, so over the last 2 years, the free agent market has changed a little bit, where it used to be just signing bonuses, right? Like, you used to just be able to, like, hey, we're going to sign you for X amount of dollars and that's it. But what we've been able to do from an agency and an NFLPA standpoint is we've been able to get teams to what we call guaranteed P5. So P5 is paragraph 5 of your contract, which is your salary. It's the biggest part of your contract, right? That's the first thing you look at when you get a contract, is what is my salary? And so what we're getting teams to do is like, hey, we'll give you $20,000 to sign, but we're going to guarantee $50,000 of your paragraph 5, which means now that player now has $70,000 in guarantees. And so what that's basically saying is anything under $100,000. So if you're on practice squad, it's $110,000 now for a full year. So what they're saying is, like, we're basically guaranteeing that you're going to be on practice squad for half the year. Right. Or if you're not, and you're on someone else's practice squad, there's offsets in there. It's like, say we guaranteed you 50,000, we cut you, but you go to the Colts practice squad for the full year and make 110. Then that is now offset on your guarantee. Right. So you have that.
Even if they get cut, they're getting this.
Yep. And if they get cut, say they get cut, they get cut, don't get picked up at all, they'll receive that lump sum at the end of the year.
Gotcha.
So they'll receive that. So you're seeing more of that, which is where you're seeing some guys, like, there was a lot of guys this year that were like combine invite guys that went undrafted. You see a lot of those guys get like $225,000 P5 guaranteed. Right. Jesus. And then you're telling them, like, okay, he's going to probably make our active. Our board just didn't fall where it fell. Right. Like, so you're seeing some of those, but I mean, you'll see signing bonuses range from, I think the average last year was about 11,000, you know, about $11,000 to sign. And then P5 is anywhere from $5,000 to, I think the highest I saw this year was 250, somewhere in there. You know, so it's just, a lot of that is just fully dependent on the team. There's some teams that are just like, nope, we're not doing P5s, nothing, right? There's certain teams like we just, that's just not what we do, you know, and sometimes they'll front load the signing bonus on that side too, you know, but it's just, it's really, it's a huge range of what guys are, you know. Usually you see it's the receivers, DBs, offensive tackles that are the highest PFA numbers, because those are the hardest things to find and there's just never enough of them. If you're kind of a guard, center, running back, it's more on the low end because those positions have been really devalued in the NFL lately.
Long snapper on the rise.
Hey, man, I have a long snapper still. He's been grinding for a year, going to all the Zahner camps, like doing.
It's impossible.
I mean, it is just a grind session for him. I tip my hat to him because I would not be able to do it.
There's a couple guys who are still kind of in the pool of like XFL, CFL, like they're trying to hang around and wait for an opportunity. And they've probably gone, to, you know, they've probably been called in for workouts 12 times, 20 times, because we're 5 years out now. We'll be going into our sixth year, not in the program. And I went to the draft prep camps with them. They were in my class and they're still doing it. I'm like, dude, part of me is like, you got to hang it up. But the other part of me is also like, hey, man, chasing the dream. You know, you're working at.
How long was Casey Kreider doing it?
He was only doing it for 2 years before he got picked up to an active roster.
Is that right? Oh, I thought.
He was like the Cowboys were essentially just hanging on to him because they had a guy who was 12 years deep. And Casey was good enough to where they were like, hey, you're not going to make the roster until our vet is done. But when he is, you're our guy. And the Broncos snagged him before the guy in Dallas.
That's the thing. If you can get on as a snapper, any specialist really, like you can stick. Like because you're cheap, especially if you're young, you're cheap. Yeah. And like if you're 10, once you hit like 8 years, your league minimum is enough where it's like you're making a big enough cap hit. It's like, why don't I go find a young player that can do this for cheap? Like he might not be as talented, but he's going to be able to get the job done.
We just had in fact, the episode before you, two episodes before you, as far as how these are coming out, our kicker from 2 years ago, Hawks kicker from 2 years ago, is going to be the front runner for the job in Tennessee because Randy Bullock got too expensive.
Yep.
So it's just like, it's so sick.
It's, the cap casualties they're killers, man.
Yeah.
Not for long league.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Going
is that like something like a lot of vets worry about? Is like once they get up to that where like their minimum is significantly higher than like a rookie?
If you're not a starter, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that's one thing the new CBA. So the new CBA was collectively bargained, renegotiated in 2020. And what it really did was squeeze the middle class of the NFL. And I got out right before that happened, but I would have called myself the middle class. You know, like I'm a guy that I wasn't starting, so I wasn't making starter money, but I was a really solid backup. You know, I was a really solid backup. I could come in, I could spot start, I could play all five positions. But like as I would get older, my salary, they bumped minimum salaries. So my salary was going to be getting bigger and bigger, which is everyone thinks that's good, right? Like, oh man, it's a good thing. Players are getting more money, but they're going to look at me and go, okay, you're in year six or seven. So that means I got to pay you, I think it's 1.6, right? Like I got to pay you 1.6. But what if I just bring in a rookie or I draft a rookie in the sixth that I can develop that's going to only make 750? And I know that's not a huge number, right? That's $500,000, close to $1 million in there. But what it does is you get four or five of those guys on a team. Now you've just saved $5 million to the salary cap. So it squeezes that. So you're absolutely right, Kevin. It's going to squeeze that middle class of the NFL. And you're going to see a little bit of suffering for it just because guys' careers are going to end quicker than they should just based off the fact that they're cap casualties, especially if they're on teams where you've got a quarterback on an absolutely mega million-dollar deal. You got to save every penny that you can.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, cool. Like you're making more money on paper, but not if you get cut. You're making zero.
Correct.
You're making zero. Only if you sign the contract. I have two more money questions.
Love it.
I love money. Why the fuck am I podcasting? Who knows? Going all the way back, because I missed this part of the conversation, I'm sure. In the pre-draft process, you sign a guy. They're part of the Searles Agency of Success, which I think you guys should rebrand to that name, by the way.
I like that.
Range of money spent from an agency on a guy you know, who wants massages and dry needling and draft prep and all that. What's the low end? What's the high end? You don't have to tell me what you guys spend, but
right.
I'm sure you know, like, what have you heard? Because I'm sure there's some like pretty absurd shit going on.
Yeah, I mean, so the going rate for training, right? We'll start there, right? The pre-draft training is anywhere between $15,000 to $20,000 for 8 weeks, right? So you're talking about sending a guy to XPE in Florida or Sports Academy, or there's a million places, Landau, wherever, right?
Hold on for 1 second. Kevin and Drake, do you guys want to open up a draft prep?
Yes.
I mean,
strength and conditioning center.
You should.
Because the three of us know more than half of the guys doing it, guaranteed.
Yeah.
And I mean, hiring Coach Doyle to be our head man immediately.
Head man.
I think Doyle's got his own thing going for that.
And there's only white people allowed.
But why not be our head man?
Cut that.
It's a joke, Kevin. Come on.
Trying to get canceled, Tyler.
No, yes, I am. We've tried so many times. That's a joke, by the way, everybody.
That's
chill
the
out.
Fun part about trying to get canceled. You just get more popular.
Wow, 15 to 20.
Well, so that's just the training, right? So that's kind of like, okay, I know that I have to invest this in this guy so he can go run in the underwear Olympics and look pretty, right? Like, that doesn't include most of these guys. So you got to fly them there. So you got to fly them. You got to put them up for 2 months in a hotel. You got to feed them, right? You got to feed them. You got to usually get them a rental car. And then
you're paying every dollar of their
life. They're on full scholarship for 4 months.
Fuck.
Yeah. They're on full. I mean, that can range because, I mean, guys that are in the first round, some guys are getting 10 grand a month in stipend from agents.
As just extra money?
Just extra money.
These guys are getting.
There's guys that are there's guys that are spending anywhere. I mean, you can spend on a player anywhere between $15,000 to $200,000. It's an enormous range, right? Because it's such a competitive business. I mean, like Kevin said, I think there's 785 around there registered NFL agents. There's only 1,500 active NFL players every year.
Yeah.
And we only get paid if they're on active. If they're on practice squad, that's a collectively bargained benefit. We do not get to charge for that.
Really?
Oh, really?
So you only get paid if you are on active roster. You know, so that's when I say it's a higher form of gambling. Like, yeah, you're hoping to break even in 2 years.
I was about to say, what you're saying is that these guys who are trying to pay the top dollar for the top dogs in, $250,000 for 4 months, he's playing for second contract money.
100%.
He's not even playing for them getting drafted in the first round. He's playing for their second contract.
100%. I call it the bus theory. You're praying that they don't get hit by a bus, right? You are, because like you're just like you're praying they don't get hit by a bus and they're going to make it to their second contract, and that's when you can try and you can ring the cash register at that point.
Yeah, right?
That's why you're in this. That's why you're trying to go. But I mean, we're in a starter agency. Like we're in a cash burn phase right now as an agency. That's just how you get into this business.
And I was just going to add, that brings me perfectly into the second part of this, and my last question, so that you can get some sleep, because I know it's important for Daddy. You as an agent are only making money from the percentage you get of your guys' contract.
Correct.
That's.
I mean you have marketing agreements. You have marketing agreements.
Okay.
Right. So like that's another part of being an agent is marketing agreements, and those range anywhere between about 10% and 20% on marketing deals. You know, if your name's not Patrick Mahomes or Aaron Rodgers or like the marketing's dimes to a dollar type of thing.
Sure.
I mean, as an agent, you're really trying to say, I want to prepare you the best I can to be the best football player you can so that you can perform between the white lines so I can negotiate you a monster second contract.
Wow.
Like that's kind of the lifespan of what it's why you see so many people get into the agent's game and be bankrupt in 2 years and drop out as fast as they were in.
Yeah.
Like, because if you try and be like, I'm going to sign a bunch of players, and you go sign them and you put $100,000 in, and all of a sudden you have one guy that makes it and he makes it on active for 2 years, you're still not going to make that money back.
Hmm.
Like,
do you see a lot of agents have other gigs?
Some do, you know, but we use that a little bit as a kind of a torpedo list for us. where it's like, hey, if you're talking to another agent that has another side gig, that means he's not fully invested in this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. That means he's not going to be there for you. If he's a lawyer, right? A lot of agents are lawyers. It's like, if he's got a litigation case, you think he's going to pick up the phone for you, or is he going to be picking up that, he's billing that guy $550 an hour on the other end?
Yeah.
You know, like, so we like, that's what I tell recruits, like, hey, this is how I put food on my table. This is how I support my family. Like, I'm all into this with you. And I think that's really important too, because you want to have, I mean, things happen. You get calls. I mean, you got to be there. You got to be ready to get any day and night, be ready to go to help these kids with whatever they need.
Well,
how's new dad life for you? We haven't talked since the kiddo life. How are things?
Yeah, a lot of advancements and progressions in the life. New dad life is fantastic. I am.
Are you getting better at being a dad yet?
No. I am blessed. I don't like using the word blessed.
Hashtag blessed.
I'm fortunate that this job being half of what I do and the other half of what I do also being from home and completely on my own schedule allowed me to, I mean, I've basically been on 5 months of paternal time off, paternity leave. And our baby girl is like the most perfect child in all senses. Not in like a, oh, I love them, they're so perfect. In like a, at 30 days old, she slept through the night for the first time. And they're not, when I say there has not been a single night where she has woken up until the morning, 4 months straight of just 10 hours straight of sleep.
Count your blessings, young man.
Yeah, I know. We're fucked for the next kid.
I paid for the sins in my second child. My third child's like that. He goes to bed at 7:30, wakes up at 4, mom feeds him, he goes back down to like 7.
Yep.
I mean, it's like cheating. My second child did not sleep through the night for her entire first year of life, and I've
heard of multiple. Yeah, we have obviously friends who all have kids, and it's like, you know, it's just hit or miss with every single one. You're just playing Russian roulette. But yeah, she's perfect, and it's amazing. We literally look at each other all the time, and it's just like, I feel like this isn't that hard, you know? Like it's
wait till you have a second. You'll be amazed how hard you thought one was.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. But life is incredible. Another thing that has happened, not in just my personal life, but in the walk-on's life, is we've upgraded to the point where we have an intern that we don't pay. Who's been sitting?
Awesome.
Yeah, and he's been sitting on the back end of this. Grant, come in.
Come here, Grant. Show yourself.
There he is.
What's going on?
This is our child labor that we hired from the University of Iowa.
It looks like G-Bone might be back in Colorado right now.
Did G-Bone be back in Colorado?
There.
Yeah.
Colorado boy, where are you from? I'm from there originally.
I live in Lone Tree.
Oh, nice. I was Lakewood. Lakewood, my whole.
Lone Tree is between Muscatine and Iowa City.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, there is that one too. I did. Funny you mentioned Colorado though, because I did have a question for you. Are you the best Bear Creek High School athlete of all time?
Yes. By far.
No doubt.
There's no doubt. The only other one that could maybe is Adeline Gray, who is an Olympic medalist in wrestling, and we were actually the same class. So
what kind of medal though? Like bronze?
Silver.
Silver.
I mean, she beats the shit out of you, dude.
Yeah, I mean, she's an Olympic medalist. I'm an NFL football player. It's tomato.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's close though. It's close.
Grant, any other questions for the man Jay? I know we didn't really prep you on who Jeremiah is
Well, I'm a little curious on Nebraska since you live and breathe them. So I'm looking like on FanDuel season win total is like 6.5. What's the expectation with Rule year one? Like, does he need to exceed that? Does he need what does a successful first season look like for Rule?
I think if we get 5 wins this year, it's a big win.
Five wins? That's what Nebraska is at now.
I would agree. It's year one.
Dude. People have to understand. Like, this is year one.
It's been year one since you guys fired Bo Pelini.
Don't disagree with you. I don't. And, you know, I think that there's a lot of people here. I saw something that came out that was like, we're going to win 9 games. And it's just.
Yeah, Will Compton said it.
Yeah, Will says a lot of things.
Compton's
going to tell Will to shut his ass.
Will says a lot of things.
Hey, hopefully the Bussin's at tight end U. We could tell him to shut his ugly ass up in person.
Well, listen, once he got his new teeth. He became a different person.
Hey, no. But what Will forgets, and we have receipts and elephant memories, is that he owes us one.
That's facts. He said he would do our show.
If we got George to do his, he would do ours.
Yeah.
He'll do it. You just got to get out to him, reach out to him. He'll do it. I wish we would.
We're going to tight end U. Like, we're also
awesome.
Yeah, we're big time. We got invited. George is having us out to his place, and then I don't know what kind of access we have to the actual tight end U event, but we're basically going to stick a microphone in every NFL player's face as we can.
Yeah, no, that'll be awesome. That'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, we're excited. But
I think back Grant, 5 wins. I think for us, we lost a lot of players to the portal. Which is to be expected with the new coach. You know, we got a quarterback change. This 3-3-5 defense, I'm somewhat a fan of, somewhat not a fan of. You know, it's going to be a feast or famine type thing. But at the end of the day, we have to just get dudes. You don't win games with scheme. You don't win games with great coaching. You win games with great players. And I think Nebraska we're trying to recruit and find good players and build a program that's just going to be consistent, because can't win college football unless you have a consistent in-house program.
Yeah, and I get the year one, like, 5 wins make sense. Like, people, like, are ready to jump down, like, Deion's throat if he doesn't get, like, to an 8-win season. It's like, it's year one, right?
Well, don't walk in and be as big as life as Deion is and not expect to have unrealistic expectations put on you with your Louis luggage.
Louis. So, I saw a crazy stat that at plus 25,000, Colorado is the biggest liability for Las Vegas sports books because
they have like 8% of all future bets.
Yeah.
So really?
Insane.
Of any bet that's available at all of Vegas?
Colorado winning the national championship is the biggest liability for Vegas sports.
There's no chance.
I would. That's a bet. No chance, that is a.
It's just if it happens.
Yeah. I would mortgage my house.
I was just going to say, I'd put everything I own on the fact that the field wins and Colorado.
Strictly because also it's the Pac-10 or Pac-12, whatever it is. Like, they haven't even had a team make the playoff yet.
Yeah, true.
Like, the Pac-12 is the worst conference in football.
But can we say that Deion Sanders has been the biggest come up in Colorado, the University of Colorado history?
Oh, easily.
I mean,
to sell what they've done and to make the money that they have, and they haven't even played a real game yet. Now, granted, I'm seeing a lot of, like, the Deion effect, where, like, everyone's now saying his son's going to be, like, a top 10 pick and all this stuff. And I'm like, okay, let's pedal the brakes here a little bit.
Hey,
like,
maybe.
I was going to say, maybe if you're his agent.
The agency's got to go chase Shadur, is his name?
I wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole. You kidding me? You have Deion as the dad just in your ear the whole time. I'm like, who are you talking to? I can talk to them. No, thanks. Hard pass. I try and avoid all former players, like kids. That's just a recipe for disaster.
Speaking of people you don't want to represent, say you're Job Morant's agent right now. What are you doing?
You quit. I mean, go flash a gun at him.
You're fucking pissed because he's costing you hella money.
Yeah. The agent side of it, you're just like, listen, the league's going to fine you, probably suspend you. Might want to stop doing that. His publicist, on the other hand, whoever manages his publicity and is like, that person hasn't slept in weeks. that person just wakes up every day and is terrified to unlock their phone. Like, just terrified to just press that little button as we all do in the morning and just look and see what shit show have I woken up to today.
Oh, shit. That's amazing.
I mean, that's like Aaron Rodgers, too. Like, the whole Aaron Rodgers thing going to the Jets. Like, yeah. Some of those guys are just, I couldn't imagine the headaches that comes with.
I would take the headaches to be a Rodgers agent.
Yeah, probably. I mean, except for you can't reach him when he's in his darkness retreat or
don't
whatever
care.
That was.
Did you ever do that?
Did you ever lock yourself in a dark room for 3 days?
3 days? Probably not. A day? No. Probably.
I'd make it 30 minutes.
I'm kind of into that shit, but
no.
Not Aaron Rodgers into it.
Drake, could you do it? You're looking at me funny.
I doubt it. I'm thinking about it. I think of myself. I fancy myself a guy that with some mental toughness. I don't think I could do it.
Don't need to be alone with my own thoughts.
Drake. I was just gonna say Drake alone with in his own head.
At that point, it's not even mental toughness. It's just psychosis.
Whatever retreat he's at, better bring the SWAT team and and stake them outside the room that Drake's in.
Padded walls.
Some shit is going to go down if Drake has to deal with all the stuff rattling around.
I come out of that room like fucking Mussolini.
What does that even mean?
I don't know, but the joke is good, right?
He'd have the next great idea for the cleansing, apparently.
Jesus Christ. Searles, you're favorite guest on the show.
Yeah. Oh, dude, I love it. Anytime I get the invite, I'm always here. Anytime I can.
We'll try to get some offensive linemen from the University of Iowa
Could you get some old linemen? They could use a little extra coaching. When is Iowa? Is it in Kinnick this year?
Yeah.
Iowa, Nebraska?
Nebraska. No, it's in Nebraska.
Is it in Lincoln this year?
Yeah. You guys beat us in Kinnick last year?
Yeah.
I can't remember.
The odd years are in Nebraska. Yeah.
Okay. Well, if you boys make it up for a game, love to have you. I'll see if I can show you what a real university looks like. Give you the ins and outs, all that fun stuff.
Okay, yeah.
I had to sneak one in there. Listen, I'm no, good. I had to sneak one in there. Okay?
Sure, we're gonna bring
our corn though. Okay.
No, you guys' corn is ass.
And our hogs, and our beef, well, and our players.
You can leave that trophy where it is.
You probably want our coaches too at this point.
I don't know. That trophy's pretty nestled right where it needs to be.
Guy wins once in a decade. I swear to God.
Hey, man.
One concussion.
What have you done for me lately, Drake?
One concussion. He's going off and talking shit.
You boys are amazing. Always great to be here.
Thanks, Jay. Appreciate everybody listening to the show. As always, if you know an NFL player 10 years down the road that has talent.
Can I shameless plug real quick?
Yeah, plug it.
So I've actually started a new podcast with a 10-year NFL vet, Alex Boone. It's called The O-Line Committee. We break down NFL film. We just launched a couple weeks ago on YouTube and Apple. So check it out if you want to. Go like, subscribe. We're looking at what it looks like to look at a game from an O-line's perspective, looking at defenses too high, all that fun stuff. So been pretty successful so far. So we're loving it. So if you like all things O-line, go check out the O-line committee on YouTube.
O-line committee. Let's go.
There we go. And that's it. Talk to you next time. Hope you enjoyed this one. Have a good one. Peace.
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 Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you want more, you can check us out on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube by searching Washed Up Walk-Ons. And if you're interested in supporting the show, head over to patreon.com/washedupwalkons where you can find bonus podcasts, merchandise, and other cool perks. Best part, half of your subscription benefits the kids at UI Children's Hospital. We'll see you next time. Hawks by a million.